Migrant Matters Radio.
Escucha Asuntos del Inmigrante. Aquí nosotros somos apasionados en explorar asuntos de migración, de los trabajadores inmigrantes y de la gente que no tiene estatus migratorio, y dando a conocer las historias de individuos que nosotros no podemos oír en los medios convencionales. Los asuntos del inmigrante se centran en desacreditar mitos de migración, que a menudo han sido favorecidas por medios convencionales y la política actual de migración. Escúchanos el último viernes de cada mes, de 6 a 7 de la noche, por esta su emisora local, CFRU 93.3 FM.
Hi, I'm Mary, and this is Migrant Matters Radio. And today we have in the studio Miguel Figueroa. He is the federal leader of the Communist Party of Canada. Miguel Figueroa is running to be a member of parliament to represent Davenport. And also, we have local Guelph candidate of the Communist Party of Canada, Drew Garvey. Thanks for coming, both of you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm just going to get right into it. Why has the Communist Party of Canada, why are they running in the elections this year?
Well, I guess I'll start to respond to that. Well, we think that this is a very crucial election, and we think that we have some very important concerns and policy positions to bring to the table that aren't really being discussed by the mainstream parties. That's why we're running about 20 candidates across the country, 9 here in Ontario. Of course, Drew is our candidate right here in Guelph, and we also have a candidate next door in Kitchener, Marty Suter, who's running for our party. We also have candidates in Quebec and Manitoba out west and British Columbia and Alberta and so on. We think it's important that we not sit out the election campaign. Elections are important because it's when people tend to maybe zone in a little bit more on political issues of the day, whether it's environmental policies or the economy, foreign policy, and so on. And so for that reason, we think it's important for us to participate, to go to all candidates' meetings, to circulate our views, and to try to convince Canadians of the need for a fundamental change in direction in our country.
Do you have anything to add, Drew?
Sure. I think in this election, we're adding a unique perspective that isn't being talked about. So that's first and foremost, we're putting kind of a systemic analysis on the table and a long-term goal, which is socialism. So we want to raise that. But also on policy issues, we do differ from the major parties. For example, War and Peace, and we'll probably get into this later in more depth, but Libya, all of the major parties, including the Green Party, have supported the intervention in Libya. So there are specific things that we're bringing to the table that nobody else is.
What is the significance of going to the polls on May 2nd? What is at stake in this election?
Well, we've certainly said that this is an extremely crucial election, maybe one of the most important that we've had in decades, maybe going back to perhaps the 88 election, which dealt with the issue of free trade in Canada-US and later NAFTA free trade. Of course, people say that every election is crucial, but I think there's many reasons to feel that this election is particularly important because we've had two consecutive minority Tory governments over the past 5 years. Everybody realizes, and of course this is a major plank, if you will, of Stephen Harper himself to say that they want to have a majority government. And certainly from our point of view, that would be catastrophic for the country, and particularly for working people in this country, for youth and students, for Aboriginal peoples, and new Canadians, for those who are marginalized into low-paid job ghettos who don't even have unions to represent them. For in other words, the vast majority of Canadians, it would be disastrous. it would be disastrous in terms of our environment and certainly with respect to our foreign policy. We'd be further and further enmeshed in the U.S.-NATO war machine and be drawn into aggressive wars and occupations and you know, around the world. So for a whole number of reasons, we think it's absolutely important that people not only pay attention to this election, but use their vote as much as they can and use their voices to warn of the danger of the Tory majority, to, in fact, defeat the Tories, if it's possible, to drive them right off the government benches and back into the opposition, as a first step towards moving our country in a different direction.
What about you, Drew? Do you want to expand on why it's important and expand on your opinions of the Harper government?
Well, I echo the statements by Miguel, and we belong to the same party, so that's not surprising. No, the Harper government has really been a disaster for the last two terms, and that's when they've only had a minority. So, for example, on the environment, you know, really being one of the principal players on the world stage in terms of making sure that no kind of regulation of greenhouse gas emissions or climate change doesn't go through at Cancun, Copenhagen. They've been probably they've taken Canada on a new path in terms of foreign policy, being some of the most vocal advocates for war and, for example, supporting different states like Israel. So on several issues, they've really stuck out as very dangerous. And, you know, this has only been when they've had a minority in power. So if they do manage to get a majority, then it's all going to be downhill from there. And this is about kind of sounding the alarm bells for Canadians is one of the reasons why we're running, and also to put forward our ideas as a way to get people out on the streets, which is where the actual change is going to come from and where the fight back needs to come from in order to stop Tory policy, yes, immediately, but then the pro-corporate policies that we've seen in Canada over the last decades, roll them back and then enact pro-people policies.
I want to get your views on the following issues and your party's views on these issues. First, the economy with a focus on employment.
Okay, well, you know, Stephen Harper says that this election campaign is all about the economy, and we agree. The economy is a central part of our lives. I mean, after all, it's where all of the goods and services that people rely on, housing, clothing, food, and so on, are produced, and how they're distributed and shared in our society. So the economy is a central issue. But, you know, he then proceeds to kind of skim over the economy in terms of the real circumstances that exist inside of Canada. He talks about, the GNP has rebounded after the crisis of 2008, 2009, and into 2010. That unemployment has come down and so on. But when you actually start looking at the situation more in depth and more critically, what we see, in fact, is that what has rebounded is not the living standards of the people as much as the profit bottom lines of the big corporations, of the banks, the oil companies, the pharmaceuticals, and so on. Their profits have rebounded very handsomely and, in fact, are approaching a corporate income for 2011 is now projected to approach $250 billion in this year alone. But the circumstances of working people are really quite different. Household debt is increasing. People are more and more in debt to the banks, not just for their houses in the form of mortgages, but to the credit card companies and so on. Employment has it's true that employment has come down. Unemployment has come down a little bit since its high in 2009. But what kind of jobs are being created? they're not full-time, permanent, well-paying jobs. They're jobs in the low-wage area, part-time, temporary jobs, other forms of casual and precarious employment. This is not helping the circumstances of working people. And meanwhile, the costs of energy is going through the roof again. That includes not just when we gas up at the gas tanks, but includes home heating for families so that they don't freeze in winter. The cost of education has skyrocketed. So to get a post-secondary education in this country, students are forced to pay tuitions which have far outraced the general level of inflation, and they're going further and further into debt. The situation of homelessness in this country has got worse. The problems of child poverty have become worse. The scandalous situation of poverty and despair amongst our Aboriginal peoples has got worse. So which economy is Mr. Harper talking about? He's not talking about the economy that faces the vast majority of Canadian working people. He's talking about the economy of Bay Street and of Wall Street and of the big oil towers in Calgary. That's the economic index that the Tories are beholden to, the interest that they serve, and the policies that they reflect in office. So yes, we think that there's a whole number of questions that need to be addressed. They're far-reaching reforms. They're not socialist reforms, but nonetheless, they're very significant reforms to raise the wages of working people, to reverse deindustrialization. Because if you look in the last 5 years, almost 500,000 industrial jobs have been lost in manufacturing and secondary industry in this country. That has to be reversed. We need to impose very strict limits and guidelines with respect to companies that cut and run from Canada. And they shut down their plants and they go to third world countries where they can pay much lower wages and so on. So we need to take a whole number of measures to protect workers, to protect their benefits, their pensions, and so on, and to create jobs through a massive housing program, which would not only help alleviate the problem of affordable housing and homelessness, but it would also put hundreds of thousands of construction workers in this country to work. We need to invest in our environment, in research and development on renewable energy. We need a national, publicly funded and administered and affordable child care system in this country for every family from coast to coast. In Quebec right now, and for a number of years, they have had a comprehensive child care system that costs $7 a day to put your child into daycare. Whereas here in Ontario, people are paying, you know, three, four, five times as much. And in fact, they can't even afford to go to work, because if they go to work, they have to pay almost as much. Virtually their whole paycheck gets taken up in terms of child care costs. So there's a whole number of measures that would improve the living standards of the people. And in terms of wage rates itself, we think that one of the best ways of lifting wages for all categories of workers is to raise the minimum wage to $16 an hour. In the city of Toronto, and I'm sure it's probably not that unlike the situation here in Guelph and in Kitchener-Waterloo and so on, you can't survive. A working person or working family cannot survive on $10 an hour. You can't pay for transportation, for heat and electricity, for mortgage or rent, for food and for dental care, et cetera, for your family on $10 an hour. It's basically, this is what is referred to as the working poor. So one of the most important measures to raise all wages would be to raise the minimum wage. The old expression that a rising tide lifts all boats. Well, with increase in the minimum wage, that would put upward pressure on all other wages as well, just as when you cut the minimum wage, it puts a downward pressure on everybody else's wage. So that, together with measures to strengthen the pension program in this country, so that we have a kind of a comprehensive pension plan for all seniors, so they can retire with some dignity after they work all their lives building this country. Things like a guaranteed annual income, all of these things would address the living standards of the working class and working people in this country.
And what about health care? Either you or Drew or both?
I can start. So basically what's been happening with health care on the federal level is that the immediate danger is that they haven't been enforcing the Canada Health Act. And provinces like Ontario, for example, have been privatizing health care through the back door. I mean, no politician in Canada is going to get elected on a platform that includes privatization of Medicare, because it is absolutely very popular. And this so-called they talk about the crisis in Medicare, and this is a manufactured crisis. It's a revenue crisis based on the fact that the government is collecting less and less revenue from those with the ability to pay, namely the corporations. And we can get into talking about the corporate tax cuts. But anyways, healthcare is not costing any more. It's just more larger chunks of the budget are going to healthcare. So we do need to increase funding to healthcare. In fact, expand Medicare to include things like pharmacare and dental care, as well as increasing the revenue to on how we get this money. And maybe Miguel wants to add something here.
I think that pretty well covers it. You know, we have said for many years that there's a kind of a conspiracy. I mean, we're not conspiracy nuts in the Communist Party, but there certainly is an organized attempt by a combination of sectors. It's not just the federal or provincial governments. It's not just an ideological question. There's a lot of money to be made in healthcare. If you look at the United States, for instance, where it's largely privatized and you have these big HMOs, private hospital corporations, the drug companies, the insurance companies, they make money hand over fist in the healthcare sector. And that's why healthcare, actually, as a proportion of the GNP, costs roughly 50% more in the United States. So Americans, one way or the other, are paying 50% more for the cost of healthcare in the U.S. than we pay in Canada. That's because we're basically the Americans are paying for profits for these companies. So there are interests, and they include the insurance companies. They include the HMOs in the U.S. who are just dying to get into Canada once the healthcare system is privatized and you have private hospitals and so on. And a two-tier, this is what is referred to as the two-tier healthcare system. One tier, which is privatized, and another underfinanced and lower quality healthcare for on the public side. So there is a mad scramble to undermine the healthcare system and convince Canadians that there's a crisis, that we have to try something else, and so on. And in that sense, we could speak of a conspiracy. And we think it's important to alert people to this campaign, because they are undermining the system. And as Drew said, they're not doing it all at one fell swoop, because they couldn't get away with it. But they're doing it, you know, the old expression of death through a thousand cuts. You know, you delist this service and that. And here in Ontario, for instance, a few years ago, eye exams were delisted. So now when you need to get your prescriptions changed, you have to pay for an eye exam. It's considered cosmetic service. Well, as far as we're concerned, eyesight is not cosmetic. It's part of your basic health. I mean, it relates to literacy. To be able to read and write is to, you know, you need proper eye care. And yet, so that's just one example of a whole number of services that are gradually being delisted from Medicare, privatized into private clinics, and now when you go to get tests, that's all contracted out to private laboratories and so on. Long-term care for our seniors is essentially privately run, and we think that that should be all part of a comprehensive healthcare system. So we're in favor of not just holding on to what we have, but extending the Medicare system to be a truly universal and free service for all Canadians, because health is a right. It's not a privilege. One of the ways to keep the cost down would be to deal with the problem of drugs. Right now, the biggest factor that's increasing healthcare budgets is the cost of drugs. And why? Because the large pharmaceutical corporations who are making money hand over fist do so because they have virtually a monopoly, and they charge whatever the market will bear. And citizens, through their tax dollars, are essentially subsidizing the profits of these private pharmaceuticals. So one of the measures that we call for is the nationalization of the pharmaceutical industry. That would significantly reduce the cost of drugs. And, you know, we're not big advocates of drug therapy, but drugs are part of medical support systems, and they will be needed well into the future. And that would significantly reduce the overall cost of healthcare. But it's a service that not only needs to be defended, but in our view needs to be extended.
What about the environment?
Well, maybe I'll start first on that. The environment is one of a number of issues that I guess Drew referred to earlier that have received short shrift during this election campaign. We think that, it's an embarrassment for our country, the role that the Harper government has played in our name at these international meetings, first in Copenhagen and later on in Cancun. Canada received the Fossil of the Year Award for being the most anti-environmental force at these meetings, and ostensibly played the role of blocking any real firm targets for carbon, gas emission reductions. And that is way out of line with the views of the vast majority of the Canadian people. It's an embarrassment and a disgrace for our country. We need, and certainly from the point of view of our party, we're strongly in favor of sharp reductions in carbon gas emissions, measures to, as I said earlier, to invest in renewable forms of energy like solar power, wind power, tidal power, and so on. Extension of mass transit, public transit, intercity trains, which would significantly cut down on the use of the private automobile, and measures to be taken against corporate polluters. Right now, corporate polluters get away with, excuse the expression, murder. They get a slap on the wrist, small fines, which don't even have an impact on their profits and their bottom line, even when they are caught polluting. We think that corporate polluters should not only be fined heavily, but they should be sent to prison. They should be convicted and imprisoned for engaging in corporate pollution that fouls our environment. So we call for a whole number of measures, and we have an environmental program, which is part of our overall program platform, which is available on our website, which I guess we'll mention later, but it's votecommunist.ca, and people can go there and see what we have to say about the environmental crisis and the environmental solutions that we offer.
How about your positions on immigration and your party's position on immigration?
Okay. I think first we should talk about kind of the dramatic changes that have happened under the Harper Conservatives. So if you look back to pre-Harper Conservatives, we had serious problems with our immigration system, but it was mainly based on the point system, right? So you get a certain amount of points for education, certain amount of points for cash, you know, how much money you have, various ways of ranking so you can get permanent residency. And we did have temporary foreign workers pre-Tories, but now we've seen a move away from the point system, a move away from things like family reunification, and a massive growth in the temporary foreign worker program and people that are coming in under those visas, and also things like the SOP program, agricultural workers in Ontario, and living caregivers as well, which is a federal program, right?
Those are all federal temporary foreign worker programs.
Right. Okay, so now, but for the first time in Canadian history, I believe, now we have more workers coming in as temporary workers, more immigrants coming in as temporary workers as we do for permanent residents. So this, what this really means is a temporary foreign worker has reduced rights from somebody with status or a Canadian citizen. So we have a difference in like a two-tiered kind of labor market where some workers don't have the rights as other workers. So, of course, this is detrimental to both the workers, the Canadian citizen workers or permanent residence workers, and the temporary foreign workers, because it drives down all wages and benefits. Just because some people don't have their rights, that means that there's going to be reduced wages and benefits for the all of the workers. Also, we can talk a bit about, kind of the scapegoating that's gone on with especially non-status people, and then most recently in this election, refugees. And there's been some of that before. But we've seen a real crackdown on enforcement of this so-called, you know, kind of U.S.-style war on illegals, where there's been a lot more raids. There's been, for example, immigration officials showing up to women's shelters or just asking for status on the street. And this has been accompanied by this kind of rhetoric coming from Jason Kenney and Stephen Harper about illegals and, scapegoating refugees and talking about, you know, human smuggling as an issue, when the fact is that refugees are, by Canadian law and international law, allowed to seek refuge, and we have a process, a flawed process, but you know it's a legal process that they're entitled to in hearing and be allowed into the country. So absolutely, the big thing is we need to get rid of the Harper Tories in order to stop these kind of racist policies that are really marginalizing immigrants and criminalizing them in a lot of ways. I don't know. Miguel, do you have stuff to add?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. The only other thing I might add is that this xenophobic policy, which is coming from the Harper Tories, is not unique or just a localized phenomenon. You see it in Europe as well, in France, a number of other countries. And it is a response, at least from our point of view, from the ruling class, to try to divide the people, to turn one section of the people against another. It's the same thing as sexism or any kind of racism against Aboriginal peoples or new immigrants. To when there is a crisis under capitalism and there's high unemployment and misery and suffering, and people start becoming more class conscious, the best way from the boss's point of view, from the ruling class's point of view, to undermine that or to weaken that is to try to convince people that the problem is not capitalism, the problem is not the policies of the big, the owners of industry and their political representatives. The problem is somehow that an immigrant came in and took your job, or that that there's too many women who are working and that somehow it's weakening conditions for men, or that the Aboriginals or this or that. So racism and xenophobia is always used as a tool to divide the people and to deflect attention from the real source of the problem. And, our policies are aimed, but our perspective, at the center of our perspective, is the need to unite. The problem is not refugees or immigrants. Canada is a very large country with a very small, relatively small population. We could use 3, 4, 5 times as many new Canadians coming to help to build up our country. We certainly have the wherewithal to do it. We have the resources to do it, and so on. but instead of that, we see this campaign to restrict permanent status, to super exploit temporary workers. The only thing I would differ from Drew's point is that these permanent workers don't have less rights. They have no rights at all. They don't have the right to workers' compensation if they get injured. They don't have the right to unemployment insurance. They don't have the right to, often they're not even covered by minimum labor standards in the workplace and health standards. And it's certainly not policed very effectively. And as soon as they have served their employers and they're laid off, they can be put on a plane and sent home that night. They can be deported out of the country, just like that. So this is almost like indentured slaves. And it's a scandalous. And as Drew correctly pointed out, this also has a deflating impact on the wages of all other workers. So workers in this country have a real interest in opposing temporary worker program and the way it's being used by the big companies, especially in Alberta in the oil patch. They're used extensively there, and instead fight for a much more progressive, open, and accepting immigration policy to bring new Canadians to our country with full rights, with the opportunities to achieve citizenship and so on.
Your ideas on foreign policy and the Communist Party of Canada's ideas on this?
Well, this is another area where, you know, there hasn't been a lot of discussion in this election campaign, particularly around the question of war and peace, which we think is rather critical. Right now, Canada's involved in not one but two wars. We also have forces, police and paramilitary forces in Haiti as part of an ongoing occupation in Haiti. But we're involved in a long-standing war of occupation in Afghanistan, almost 10 years long, twice as long as the whole Second World War. And now we're engaged in this imperialist aggression against Libya, with the possibility that that, too, will escalate into a full-fledged ground war. So we're fundamentally opposed to these wars. The vast majority of Canadians are opposed to the war in Afghanistan, yet it drags on and on and on. And we think that at root, Canadians need to ask themselves the question, why are we still in NATO? Let's remember that NATO, as an organization, was first sold in Canada, the United States, Western Europe, and so on, as a defensive alliance to protect the West from the big, bad Soviet bear. That was, you know, the evil empire. That was why NATO ostensibly was set up. It was always a lie, because, in fact, NATO was established even before the Warsaw Pact and whatnot. But certainly the Soviet Union has disappeared 20 years ago. And NATO has redefined its role not just to protect the North Atlantic, but in fact to consider the entire globe its field of operations. There are NATO command structures in Afghanistan that's not anywhere near the North Atlantic. The assault in Libya is neither, that's in North Africa, that's not in the Atlantic area. So we think that Canada should get out of NATO. It was always an aggressive military alliance and is becoming ever more aggressive. It went in and attacked Yugoslavia. Later on, NATO-related forces were involved in Afghanistan, in the occupation, the war and occupation of Afghanistan, then in Iraq, now in Libya. Where will it end? And this military adventurism contradicts what most Canadians want our armed forces to do. They want our armed forces to be involved in peacekeeping, to protecting our own citizens, our own borders, patrolling our own waters, and so on, not to engage in aggressive foreign occupations and wars. So we're putting this forward, but the fact of the matter is that the mainstream parties are basically all marching to the same drummer, even on the question of defense spending. Yes, there's a debate about the F-35s, but whether more money should be spent on warships as opposed to F-35s. But the fact is that military spending under the Harper government has risen dramatically over the past 5 years and is projected to continue to rise way ahead of all other forms of program spending, way ahead of the inflation rate for the next 15 years. Already this year, it's at $23 billion. And even the NDP has said that they will not take a nickel out of defense spending. Well, we beg to differ. We're calling for a 75% cut in arms spending, for ending these wars, for bringing our troops home, and for getting out of NATO. This perspective, which at first blush may seem rather extreme, is actually actually in line with the views of millions of Canadians across our country.
Your perspective, too?
Well, yeah, I think Miguel's done an excellent job of outlining it, but it's even for the if you were to ignore the fact that, you know, being involved in these aggressive wars is immoral and occupying countries is immoral, on the basis that, bombing a population for oil companies or occupying a country and being involved in the torture of civilians is immoral. But also the military spending that goes into doing this is outrageous, as Miguel said. A lot of people's, including mine, eyes kind of glaze over when we talk about billions and billions of dollars. But $20 billion a year and set to go up for military spending for average undergraduate tuition, that would cover the entire country four times over. So, sorry, that would it could cost about $5 to $6 billion to cover all undergraduates' tuition in Canada. So we could effectively abolish tuition four times over with the military spending. So things like that, and we've already mentioned, we need universal child care, we need to expand Medicare, we need a housing act. Things like this is where this money, this money is needed urgently. So we need to divert these funds into progressive areas.
Yeah, I'd like to just pick up just further and to build on that point. In our platform, and people take a look at our platform, they'll say, well, the old question, well, how are you going to pay for it? Well, Drew has drawn attention to what a 75% cut in arms spending would contribute. We also, of course, call for a doubling of the corporate tax rate from, next year it's going to 15%, and we're calling for it to be doubled to over 30%. That, in just a five-year period, given the present level of the net corporate income in this country, would garner for public services, for program spending at the federal level, some of which could be transferred to the provinces and municipalities and so on. But the point is that that measure alone over 5 years would increase government revenues by $187 billion. And I hear what you're saying about, people's eyes glazing over at these amounts because it's hard to wrap our heads around all of that amount of money. But as Drew pointed out with respect to tuition, there's other examples. We could build 200,000 affordable, not-for-profit social housing units in this country, which would not only put construction workers back to work, but it would also help to reopen all of these closed appliance plants and so on and so forth, because every one of those units would need a washer and a dryer and this and that, and toasters and blah, 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 which would address the problem of homelessness and poverty. We could do that on Aboriginal communities as well as on our inner cities and so on. That undertaking of 200,000 units of social housing, right now the federal government is producing zero social housing in this country. So to build 200,000 units of affordable housing, that would cost about $4 billion. We could eliminate the fare boxes. The fees when you get on the subway, at the toll booth. We could completely eliminate the fares on all public transit in this country, in every city in this country, for another $4 billion a year. So think about all the things that could be done with that $187 billion in corporate profit. And the third thing that we call for, and this is perhaps the most radical, people might say, well, that's really utopian, that's really out of this world, is to call for the nationalization of oil and gas in Canada. Canada is, is very fortunate to have these petroleum resources. There's big problems with petroleum resources. We need to get away from a carbon-based economy. But one of the best ways to do that would be to place it under public ownership and democratic control. Is that utopian? No, it's not utopian. Countries like Venezuela have publicly owned oil and gas industry. Bolivia just nationalized their petroleum industry. Iraq today, the country that the U.S. went in and liberated from Saddam Hussein, that has a nationalized oil and gas industry. Many other countries do. Mexico does. People don't even realize this. I mean, people go to Mexico and they see Pemex, they think it's a private company. It's owned by the Mexican people. And all of the revenues that come right from the wellhead, right to the gas pump in Mexico, go into paying for education, social services, health care, and so on. So it is plausible. It's possible. We need the political will to fight for that. But that measure, together with increasing corporate tax rates and taking other steps like cutting the arms budget, would generate tremendous amounts of resources that would allow us to deal with all sorts of social problems in this country.
The Communist Party of Canada's platform on parliamentary integrity, focusing on transparency.
We can talk a bit about we can probably talk a lot about the Harper Tories and their kind of just disdain for even the democratic processes that we have in place in Ottawa now. And as far as contempt of parliament, proroguing parliament when you get caught, sending detainees to be tortured, proroguing parliament just to hold on to power, to stop a semi-progressive coalition, which would be the majority of the parties that the majority of Canadians voted for forming a coalition. So one of the things we're calling for is, well, the immediate thing is to get rid of the Harper Tories because they are a real danger in terms of democracy, and also out on the streets in terms of, we saw a taste of the erosion of our democratic rights on the streets of Toronto last summer when it was the largest mass arrest in Canadian history with 1,100 people getting arrested. But there's also structural things with Parliament that we should change. We advocate the right to recall MPs, for example, something that would hold MPs accountable probably, which I think we're the only people advocating this, would be that MPs receive the same wages and benefits as the average working person in Canada, which would obviously give a good incentive for them to raise the living standards of all people. Also, the electoral system needs to be changed immediately, and I think the vast majority of Canadians agree that we do need to move towards proportional representation. The first-past-the-post system encourages low voter turnouts, lack of participation, and the choosing of the lesser evil, not necessarily the way you want the direction of the country to go, but making sure that the most regressive policies don't come in. So we need to actually bring in a system that allows people to vote for the choice that they want to vote for, and encourages people to actually go to the ballot, because the system we have now, the majority of people are not electing the government in Ottawa. So is this democracy? I'm not sure.
I just wanted to ask you about your positions on Aboriginal peoples.
The situation, economically, socially, culturally, with respect to education and language, with respect to health, water provisions, and so on, is absolutely deplorable. And it is simply unacceptable in a wealthy country like Canada that we should relegate not just any community, but especially the first peoples of our country, the ones from whom we essentially stole their land, and when the first settlers came to Canada, and have conducted there's only one word to refer to it, a kind of a genocidal policy against Aboriginal peoples, to destroy their culture, their identity, to make their circumstances virtually unlivable, that a whole number of measures are needed to rectify that. First and foremost includes, of course, the settlement of long-standing land claim disputes, which have never been resolved. We have whole sections of Aboriginal peoples who are in the non-treaty category, but they have inherent Aboriginal rights which need to be acknowledged and respected. There's an issue not only of economic activity on the surface of the land, and their ownership of land masses for their settlement, but there's also the question of the subsurface rights to that land, which is not acknowledged, and mining companies and other corporate interests, oil companies and so on, are eager to exploit that wealth and to push aside inherent rights of the Aboriginal peoples. So we need to take a whole number of steps to redress these grievances. It's not simply a question of saying, well, so something should be done. Measures need to be taken precisely because of the policies that have been taken by Canadian governments for even before Confederation, which have placed them in such a chronic situation of underdevelopment, of grinding poverty, of homelessness, of despair. You know, it's not by accident that unemployment rates are the highest on reserves, that suicide rates are the highest, that drug addiction is the highest. That would be the case if any community in this country was treated the way our Aboriginal peoples have been treated for not decades but centuries. So we're strongly in favor of addressing those questions. And here again, you know, if you go to our platform, you'll see the number of points that we advocate for them.
And again, we're speaking to Drew Garvey and Miguel Figueroa, two candidates of the Communist Party of Canada. Is there another issue that you both would like to highlight in your campaign?
Well, I think we covered most of the highlights of our platform. Of course, unlike some of the other smaller parties that have, you could say, kind of a single issue or just a kind of a narrow focus for their platforms, the Communist Party platform deals with a whole range of questions, everything from the rights of municipalities, the national questions in this country, because right now we have a constitution that doesn't even acknowledge that, doesn't acknowledge Aboriginal people's rights, does not recognize Quebec as a nation within Canada, although most Canadians, certainly in Quebec, but also in English Canada, understand full well that Quebec is not just like a province like any other province, that it is really a historically constituted nation. So we need a constitution, we need a new constitution in this country that is based on an equal and voluntary partnership of the Aboriginal peoples, English Canada and Quebec. We need a Bill of Rights that guarantees the rights of labor in this country to organize, to strike, that bans things like strike breaking and scabbing and so on. We need changes in the Constitution that recognize the role of municipalities. Right now, you know, we've got a Constitution that dates back to 1867 and has, all of the trappings of a kind of a colonial structure. But even if that wasn't the case, it reflected the reality of this country, you know, almost 150 years ago. Today, 80% of the people in this country live in cities, and yet municipalities have no status under the, under our Constitution. So for a whole number of reasons, you know, we think that that questions like this need to be addressed as well. And of course, in our platform, we also deal with a whole number of other issues that we haven't had a chance to get into today. Mm-hmm. That's why we invite people to check us out more. More fully, to go to our website. We have a general website, which is www.communist-party.ca, and a special election site, which is votecommunist.ca. And so take a look at what we have to say and check us out.
Why should people vote for the Communist Party of Canada?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question, because that's what a lot of people are asking us. And it has to do with the first-past-the-post system of people, you know, have this dilemma of, like, should I be strategically voting, or what are the options, and why would I vote communist? Like, what does that mean if, you know, we're running 20 candidates across the country? We have had MPs and MPPs in the past, but, you know, we're obviously not going to be forming a government in this election, and that's not our immediate aim. What we're calling for is a progressive coalition of MPs. So taking a look at your candidates, seeing whose policies are the most progressive and which MPs are willing to stand up in Parliament and, you know, put forward pro-people policies and stand up to the corporations. So we suggest doing that. But what does voting communist mean? Voting communist is the clearest message you can send against globalization and war and the need for real change, for labor rights, for the environment, for Aboriginal people, for, you know, right down the line. So this is something that we're offering, and we think that the politicians and the public do pay attention to the so-called wasted votes that our electoral system creates, and it does send a message. So that's what voting communist will say in this election.
Are there any other messages to the voting people of Guelph that you'd like to share?
Just to make sure you get out and vote no matter what this Monday. It's very important, as we've been talking about. It's easy to be discouraged with politics and sit at home. You know, being a progressive in Canada is difficult. But it's important that, you know, on May 2nd that we're all out there and that progressives do vote and do take the time to go to the polls. And we are going to, you know, voting's just one part of the struggle. So, you know, on May 3rd, we're going to be continuing to organize, and that's where the real change is going to come from, no matter what happens in Ottawa, is that we do need to be on the streets and we do need to create that movement that will enact those policies.
You're listening to Migrant Matters Radio on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph's Community Radio, and I am Mary, and so I've been speaking with Miguel Figueroa. He is the federal leader of the Communist Party of Canada, and also with Guelph's local candidate for the Communist Party of Canada, Drew Garvey. And you can check out more information about the Communist Party of Canada by visiting votecommunist.ca. Thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
The rights of tens of thousands of migrants working as living caregivers in Ontario are being neglected. As the name suggests, caregivers give care to those in need of assistance. But who's caring for the rights and needs of migrants working as living caregivers? Migrante Ontario is a non-profit organization advocating for the rights and well-being of migrants working as living caregivers. The passing of Bill C-50 has made it easier for people working in Canadian migrant worker programs to work with temporary status, but harder to gain permanent residency. Working with temporary status in Canada leaves the rights of migrant workers far less protected. However, most migrants who come to Canada are led to believe that they have the chance to become Canadian citizens. Interested in getting involved with the Guelph contingent of Migrante Ontario? Connect with us at migrante.ontario@gmail.com. That's migrante.ontario@gmail.com.